We will start the Thursday, December 13th, 2018 Planning Commission meeting. Let's start with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So the first thing on the agenda is to approve the November minutes. I move to approve.
I have just a couple edits.
Okay.
They're just typos.
Okay.
So on page 2, I already mentioned that just a correction on spelling for minutes. Mm-hmm. I already showed that one tag. The last sentence on page 2. Just needs to be reread. The last sentence has two ways.
Okay.
And the sentence prior, just one prior to that, isn't a complete sentence. Does it make sense?
Yes. I have noticed that. Yes, Elizabeth's name. In the first paragraph.
Mm-hmm. And then page 4, just do a search for penalties. It's spelled wrong, penalties. And that's it.
Okay. Shall we wait until the next meeting to approve?
I think we could approve if Peck's okay with those.
I think we will.
Okay. So motion stands to approve.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So what we have on the agenda for tonight are to review the skeleton residential short-term residential ordinance. We'll hear from Curtis before we do that. We'll get an update from Josie on the general plan work and talk about the meeting schedule for 2019. All right, so anything else for the agenda?
No. What I actually left off, public comments is on there.
Public comments.
But I actually left off the line item on upcoming business.
Okay.
Which I don't know about, but
yeah.
You might want
to. Okay, we'll talk about that. Curtis.
Okay. You haven't had a public meeting, or a public hearing, sorry. You've had a public meeting, and you've received some public input. I thought what I would do after sending you those articles in the paper of the different way that jurisdictions are struggling with this issue is kind of try to outline some basic concepts that you can look at, and you can start to narrow the options and think, well, what really is it that's appropriate for Boulder? Because the ordinances are never one size fits all, and Sandy's needs are different than, you know, St. George's needs, or well, they might be more similar, but they're certainly different than Boulder's needs. So I thought I'd go through the complaints that people have had and the issues that they brought up, and then drop back a little bit and say what are ordinances intended to do? What are you authorized to do under state statute under the Land Use and Development Act? And in Utah, the Utah law says that property rights have a presumption. Then the municipal bodies are allowed to limit those property rights, but you have to have a reason to do it. And so you start saying, okay, well, if I'm going to limit somebody's right, in this case, to rent out their bedroom or their house, then what are my reasons for doing that? And it's really a balancing act, and those are scales. Right now they're a balance. So you start out with the basic question, well, what's the problem? You know, and what's the problem in Boulder? Not what's the problem in Sandy or Salt Lake or St. George. What's the problem in Boulder? And the way you identify a problem is you try to use facts, or what they say, well, substantial evidence. And you recall that Moab case we talked about, that's kind of where they centered around it. It's not your gut feeling on things. It's really what you're looking for is, well, what's the factual basis of the different issues that you're trying to address. And of course, you know, a good way to do that is like any reporter would, what, where, when, and who. So in other words, when you get to your public hearing stage, it would be good if you started hearing some things about, well, we have this next to us, and it was very disruptive, or they have a dog tied up all day, they went hiking, and there were no instructions in there, the thing barked all day, we didn't know who to go to, or whatever they don't like about it. But rather than just have it be, well, I just don't like it, why don't you like it? And then back that up with, what happened? What caused you not to like it? What was the disruption? So you get into the noisy thing. You can also get into, and this blends into the character of the town, but neighborhoods have character as well. And some neighborhoods are really spread out and have a different kind of character. Neighborhoods that are really consolidated have that kind of character. And they both have different potential for disruption. But once again, ask yourself, well, have we had any actual disruption? These other jurisdictions that have had hearings on this, going back for years now, they have a lot of what they consider actual disruptions. They have a lot of people pulling in right next door, you know, on these small lots, and the whole family piles out of the car. And, you know, you can see where, well, okay, I respect your right to make money off that property, but, you know, every weekend for a month now, a new crew. I mean, so it's really a matter of the facts and the disruption and the way it's viewed by the neighbors and how that applies to Boulder. So as you look to make a record in your public hearing, and then you look to put stuff on this record when you consider how you want this ordinance to go, keep that in mind and use these facts and use what you hear in the public hearing to justify the decision. So it's factual. The character of the town is something that I've heard you raise repeatedly, and a lot of people raise that when they come to meetings, and everybody is concerned with the character of our town. Is it an ag? Are we an ag town? Certainly. Are we a tourism town? It would certainly seem so, that we're becoming more and more so all the time. And then you ask yourself, how would these short-term rentals change the character of our town? And would they change the whole character of our town? Or would they change it in certain spots where maybe it's more focused? Would they maybe even change it for the better? Because there's some studies showing that 97% of the traffic coming through Boulder in the summer is doing just that. It's just driving on through. And you talk to local businesses, they say, not much of it is stopping. A lot of them are on a route from Capitol Reef to Bryce. And they're just, so, you know, what do you want to deal with that? And what I just said is hearsay. I mean, is that really true? But there are highway studies that would tell us that if we want to dig into those facts and see, you know, what it is that, so, and then you start to ask the people at the public hearing, well, how does this impact your life? How does it impact your property? Do you want to stop more of it? Or do you fear that that's going to make us Moab? Do you want to stop less of it or none of it? Or how do you feel about that? And how the residents and the property owners feel is important, but it should be based, once again, it should be fact-based. And the character is a little more, a little less fact-based, a little more how you feel about the place. Another element that you hear cited by people and is written up, especially in like ski resort towns and so forth, is the long-term rental market. And so instead of just making an assumption that, well, we're the same as Aspen or something, where the employees are being squeezed out, Park City, stop and look for evidence that, say, a rental that's an employee housing rental is also good for an Airbnb. Are they the same? Or are they, in fact, different? I mean, I've heard some people say, I wouldn't rent a place out for employee housing. You just can't get any money for it. But I might do it for tourism because I can get money for it. And then you look at the different rentals available, how much money people put into an RS put into a short-term rental versus into a long-term rental, and there are some differences. And then I've even heard people say, oh, it's not my job to house somebody else's employees. So these are just factors. I'm not saying any of this is right or wrong, but there are things that you look at and you weigh in the whole mix. And then the other one I've heard, and I may be missing, you know, a point or two here, I don't know, but you know, you can put it out there, you can go through and I'll make notes. But the other one I heard brought up by someone who came over from Escalante, and it was also in, I think it was the Canaan newsletter I sent you to, was regulatory fairness. And there was a difference between the standards that a motel was held to than a residence. Now, I'd like to do that a little bit. I think that one, frankly, in the law, we call that a make-weight argument, I believe. And you might disagree, but, you know, if you're on the fourth story of a Holiday Inn and it catches fire, that's a whole different ballgame than being in a residence with front door to back door and windows you can get out of. And there's a very good reason why multi-story structures that are sealed off floor to floor with a lot of rooms and stuff have to have different regulatory structures. But I know that motel and hotel lobby likes to use this one and say, well, it's not fair. But I have a hard time personally getting my head around that. But, you know, it's a point of discussion because it does get raised. So anyway, that's kind of, if you will, a thumbnail sketch of a way that you can start to guide through this ordinance. And then we can go through and talk about the specific things you like or don't like. But what I'm trying to do there is, like I said, give you a framework to develop a record as you go through this.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
And thanks for the Tailored Ordinance. That's a definitely a good place to start. I wanted to start, before we look at the ordinance, to talk about what we had sort of talked about in terms of the whereas clauses a few months ago, just to remind ourselves of that discussion and see how close we are with the ordinance that we have. So I'll go through those again. The first was that we basically said that, and I'll paraphrase them, that we would like, we would like to allow residential short-term units in Boulder. The second was that we would like to preserve the character of Boulder. The third was that we intend to do it in a way that residents will benefit from the income. That we didn't think that they belonged in, or that we wanted to allow them in non-commercial zones. We wanted to mitigate the impact of local business, which is kind of the last thing that you mentioned. We wanted to mitigate the impact to long-term housing, for low-cost and seasonal housing, that we wanted to monitor them, and that we wanted to restrict it to Boulder residents. So that's just a reminder of where we had started. I think maybe it makes sense to maybe talk about what problem we're trying to solve, if we're indeed trying to solve a problem. And I don't know at what point it makes sense to read Matt's comments. Are they on the ordinance specifically, the skeleton? All right, so we can read it when we get to the skeleton. Does anyone want to start talking about what we're actually trying to solve?
The problem?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if that's what you want to start with, basically, is, you know, what is the problem that we're trying to solve?
I think it's worth, I think we've talked about it many times.
Yeah.
I think it's worth restating it now.
Yeah.
And my opinion is in some cases, we're trying to solve problems we don't have yet.
Right.
But I don't necessarily need to start a discussion, but I will. Okay, start.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
It's like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, give us a start.
I would say there's not a problem we're trying to solve. I think that one of the reasons we're doing this is because there is Well, there are multiple concerns. One concern is that Boulder residents are seeing more Airbnbs in their neighborhoods, and that makes them uncomfortable for various reasons. I think one reason it makes them uncomfortable is because generally there's a resistance to having people in our neighborhoods that we don't know. We don't necessarily like transients in our neighborhoods. That's one reason why we have a commercial zone for things like transient people in town. Another problem that, a sort of counter to that is there's a feeling, and I've heard from Boulder residents, that they own the property, they want to do what? They want to be able to do what they want with that property. And in some cases, they feel like the best way to make money on their property is to rent it. And they don't want any restriction on that. So that's another thing that I think we need to consider. I think the big problem that we're trying to solve is guiding the way the town is changing. Curtis touched on this when he talked about, are we an agriculture town, are we a tourism town, where are we going? And the way I think about that isn't not necessarily where are we going, but where do we want to be going? Mm-hmm. Because this ordinance will guide that. My personal feeling is we're primarily an agricultural town with tourism, and that tourism, and we're a quiet use town, that tourism is kind of built around the fact that we are an agricultural town. I don't think the people in this town want to be a tourism town like many of the other tourism towns in Utah.
Right. I believe that too.
Yeah. So I think what we want to do is allow tourism in a way that preserves our character as an agricultural town. And there are a lot of other sort of little problems, like people coming in from outside Boulder and changing the character of the town, that I think we want to be aware of. But I think those are kind of wrapped up in the character of the town and Boulder residents wanting to be able to make money, whether they're renting out property or caretaking another property. And this, I think, the main issue that the reason we talked about the ADUs and the reason we're talking about this is because of the need for housing in Boulder to support the people who work here. I don't think it's anyone's job to provide housing necessarily for anyone else. I don't necessarily think it's anyone's job to provide housing for anyone else. I do think that from an ethical standpoint, as a resident of Boulder, I think the people that I rely on to support me living here, who work at the restaurants and the coffee shop and the convenience stores, I want them to be able to afford to live here. That's how I feel. So that's another way we're trying to guide. That's one way I'm trying to guide our ordinances, to allow for seasonal employees to live here while they're working here, and also for people who want to live here long term. I don't necessarily think it's our responsibility to make sure that anyone who wants to live here can live here for what they want to pay, but I do think it's our responsibility to make sure that people aren't necessarily priced out, especially, I think a lot of the people who have lived here for a long time couldn't move here today if they didn't live here already. And I think that is a way that the town's character changes. I may not have touched the who, what, when, where, how, but that's sort of, those are the main points that I want us to address.
Well, the thing about that I see about having ADUs and short-term rentals is I think we figured out the ADU for right now. And the short-term rentals, to me, has been really confusing because of so many things as far as we can't not have, you know, Airbnbs in town, or we can. And, you know, we read a lot of articles about the problems that people, issues, because you do hear about the issues. We very seldom hear about the good points of Airbnbs, you know, like they're just not out there. You know, and so it's hard for me. I find too that it's really hard for me to take a big city and look at all this information and put it this big down into Boulder. You know, as far as bringing it down and trying to figure things out. You know,
yeah.
And with Curtis, I mean, were you showing us all the information on all those different towns as far as what they're doing? They're so different and varied for their towns. And so I do feel like that we should be, I mean, if we want to start, because our town is so little, if we want to document every one of them and say we're only going to have so many per acreage, that we should be able to do that. Or if we want to put them in a certain area, that with the town's consensus, that we should be able to start that and keep an eye on it. I think what's happened with big cities and whatever, that things happen so fast to such a large degree. We're here if we want to start small by designating certain places, we can, because we should be able to start documenting things from day one.
Yeah, so you know? I happen to agree with you. I think one of the challenges we're going to face is that instinct that people have, that they have the right to do whatever they want on their land. And if my neighbor has an Airbnb and they've hit the quota for my neighborhood, why can't I have one? So I think we're going to have to deal with that. And I'm fine with the challenge of dealing with that, but I think we just need to be upfront that's going to come up.
Yeah.
And so maybe we can do things like, you know, limit your conditional use to a certain number of years so that it rolls over. So that if, you know, 5 houses in the neighborhood of 20 can have a permit, maybe you can only have that permit for 3 years, and then it rolls over to someone else who wants it, if they do.
Yeah.
I would just add, I agree with everything you said as far as what is the problem, you know, why are we looking at this? I think it was really well stated. I would just add one thing, that we currently have unregulated commercial businesses in residential areas, and so that, therefore, is a problem that as a planning commission, you know, we should deal with.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I don't think not passing ordinance is an option because of what you just said.
And I think we're small, like I said, when it comes right down to it, we're a small enough town to capture everybody and start, figure out what everybody's doing right now and document it. That's the word, I don't know if that's the word I want to use, basically, and then go from there, because we are such a small town. Figure out what is going on in town. Where are they? Who's not, because we, just for the information, like you were saying, it's not because we want to know who's doing what, or we don't want them to do, because we need the information in our town. What is that?
I just pulled everything I could find off of VRBO and Airbnb and just did a front page picture of everything that was in or around Boulder.
Oh,
I think that's
great. This is great.
Okay.
I think, yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about the need to be very conservative with how we do this.
Yeah.
Which I think is very appropriate for Boulder.
Yeah.
And essentially, what you just mentioned helps us define the problem. Like, we'll define the problem as we allow the use.
Yeah.
We'll define the problem better, and then be able to adjust the ordinance as we need to.
Yeah. Does that make sense, or?
Yeah. Great. Thank you. On the beam. Do you want to, once you get done with your general discussion, do you want to kind of go through this skeleton and
try to
give you some guidance on specific elements of it?
Yeah. I want to see if anyone else has
any questions. Yeah, when you're ready to do that, let's start it.
I found it interesting that the Sandy thing was overturned. I mean,
in what way?
It was overturned, right? The appeal. So at first, it was there was information basically that you couldn't keep an Airbnb out of a residential area. But they proved basically that you can, because of the intent of how they wrote it, which is like, we want open spaces, and we've talked about that for in our general plan and every single thing. So I feel like we have footing. That made me feel a lot better to see that decision, basically, because they had something to hold on to, which I feel that we can create.
And what are the details of how they...
The Sandy case was the first case in Utah on this back in 1998 when these things first hit the market. And basically, people were renting out their homes in Sandy, and neighbors started objecting in these little compacted neighborhoods, and they got pretty vocal about it. And so the town said, you can't do that. That's a single family neighborhood. And so some of those people that were doing it took them to court, and the court ruled against Sandy City, saying, if you want to regulate this, you have to do it a lot more specifically than what you're doing, because the presumption goes with the property owner, and the burden is on the municipality to be very specific in what you're regulating and justify it with what we were just talking about, you know, the facts and the data and the evidence. But then, so then they went back and they crafted an ordinance and they outlawed it, except for, I presume, the non-compliant use of property under the wire. And it went along like that for probably about 2 decades. And then people came back in and said, no, we want to be able to do it, but we understand you've got to control it. And so that's when they started apportioning them out. And in the article, it talked about people supplementing their retirement, et cetera, et cetera. And so now they've come back to the middle ground where they're allowing them in certain places and under certain conditions.
And those conditions are governed by essentially what they've defined as the character of the town that they want to preserve, or the neighborhood.
Well, it was a lot of it's about disruption and space.
And it was the wording. Because we have, I believe that we have the wording too. It's not, a lot of times it's the wording, right? And how you define those things. And if we have the wording right, then hopefully somebody isn't going to get mad at us, because we are trying to craft it on facts.
Yeah.
and whatever. And because of the way that we are here and the way that we have, and I go back to open spaces, that we've been trying to do that for years and years and years. So why change that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think just to go into some of what you were asking in the beginning, Carrie, just to bring in some points of all the things that we've said, but then from the public comments of last meeting, from some of the things that people talked about. I know Walt's here, but one of his was the long-term impact and looking at that. Gladys was talking about how it's the new way of lodging and it's what the people in the community want. So I just think as we're going through to keep coming back to the information that we're getting from the public and their comments each time.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, goes into, you know, if you're going to phrase it as what is the problem, you know, not necessarily a problem, but why is it that this is what is on the table for us right now? And it's because it's a concern from the community. And so to continually bring in those community comments throughout the whole process and not just at the public hearing.
Yeah. And Colleen, you had mentioned you don't hear often about the good parts of Airbnb.
Yeah.
And that made me think of a few of the public comments that we heard, from Mary Jane Coombs, who came in and said she's supplementing her income by caretaking, and by Laurel, who's Laurel Holding, who said that she's made $8,000 last year, which I'm sure is a welcome supplement to her income. Mm-hmm.
Putting pluses in there.
But I mean, basically in general, too.
Right.
The public doesn't really know this, but I read the article that you sent to us too on Airbnb and how they are they're doing architecture now and they're developing their own houses because they know that there is a problem in the whole world as far as housing and people traveling and trying to make money and where people like to stay. And we're not going to get away from it.
Right.
You know, so
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I found that article really interesting because their Airbnb's not going to quit what they're doing. They're heading in a totally different direction now.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to make it easier for people to rent out their part of their property.
Yeah.
Because that's how they make money, and also...
Yeah, there's a need for it.
And people like that idea.
Yeah.
There's not, and whether there's a need for it or not, there's a heavy desire for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe, too, I'm like with you. Like, I feel like we can talk tonight and throw some stuff, throw some ideas around, and I don't know how we get the public input, but I really...
I'm sure we'll get it.
I really want to hear it, yeah.
And one thing, like, another example that I want to pick up is Randy's.
Yeah.
Randy Cavill, who, his example of his son, who either has bought or is going to buy property here and build a house and won't be moving in immediately.
Yeah.
And if I understood what he was saying correctly, I think I'd get it now. He's saying, my son could make a lot more money renting out that property on a short-term basis before he moves in. Why should he be prevented from doing that? Why should he be forced to rent it out long-term?
Yeah.
And I have reasons why that we should prevent that. But that's another desire in the town. And the reason why I think that's a tricky use is because that means that essentially, if we allow that, that means anyone not living in Boulder could buy and own property in Boulder and just continually rent it out on a short-term basis. And that's, I think, something specifically we're trying to avoid.
So one of Matt's points specifically that it would address there is, and I'm going to read it exactly how he wrote it. I think that a lot owner doing the RSTR should occupy said property 6 months of the year. Intent here is to ensure RSTR people are, who are residents have a long-term commitment to the town of Boulder and care about its future. This is to discourage outside profiters who care nothing for this community. And it doesn't quite go to that, but it overlaps that same, like, is 6 months reasonable? Is it, you know, if whether we're using one of the capital boys, you know, if coming and spending 3 months over the course of the year is realistic, you know, for someone that is trying to be able to move here full-time but needs to finish something else first.
And the challenge is it's hard to distinguish someone who cares about the character of the community and wants to preserve it and someone who doesn't.
That was one of Matt's.
Yeah. All right. Shall we get into the ordinance?
And just along what you were saying there, absentee ownership, added that. I forgot to put that down, but that's, there's different ways to address that, and that's one that towns have addressed and that seems to have a good basis in, a good rational basis rather than, you know, people coming in buying up scads of property and, you know, renting them out. It serves the residents, and it's hard to craft it, but there are ways to wade through this. I tried to put a couple of things in here, but we can talk about it, and you can tell me, well, maybe we try this, try this, try this.
Yeah, I saw those. And also, if we're going to start slow, then I see no reason why we shouldn't start with older residents. We could decide that that's not, we could decide that we want to open it up more, but if the first, I think we want to make sure that the first people with short-term rentals in town are our residents. That just, that flows from everything we've said we want to do. Okay, why don't I, it's not a long word, so why don't I just read the sections and we can talk about each section. Does that make sense? Okay, so the first whereas clause, whereas the town of Boulder finds it beneficial to diversify the rental housing options available in towns. I wonder if we want to be more specific there.
Can I have one? Is there another call?
You can look at
my. Okay, good. Thank you, Sharon. You can go ahead and take it. Oh, and she's got. Okay, I'll share with her here.
Okay.
Here, you can, if anybody. Oh, I guess there was.
And on the whereas clause, I needed to throw some.
Oh, sure.
Yours and blended them with some others. And then also, there's kind of some things that are required. You should do in the law. Mark McKibb is going to insist on too. So I was trying to do.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about whereas clauses. They are non-binding, but they outline our intent. There's no, and they should be backed up by the ordinance. So there's no reason to have a whereas clause if it's not backed up by something in the ordinance. And if something's in the ordinance, there should probably be a corresponding whereas clause so that anyone who reads this understands the intent behind the ordinance.
So that said, the whereas clauses they read right now to me are a little confusing because they're not specific to short-term rentals. When I read it, it seems like an introduction to the ADU specifically and not necessarily the 129-day short-term rentals.
Yeah, so I certainly on this first one, I think that we want to be more specific because we're not necessarily trying to diversify the housing.
I grabbed the wrong ordinance.
I think, you know, we want to allow these, but the reason we want to allow these is not necessarily to diversify the housing options in town.
Yeah, to me that...
Sure,
that
this is the ADU ordinance.
I think the whereas clauses seem like they're from the ADU, and then we go into short term, so I was wondering if that was the title.
And the top of it is just mixed up.
I'll get the awareness causes. That's worthless to go through them.
All right, let's go straight to the ordinance.
So then the rest of that, okay, cool.
That makes me feel better, actually.
Yeah. A lot less discussion.
So starting with section one.
Yeah.
And this ordinance is, this is going to be chapter 10. Yes, this is an amendment to Chapter 10, Chapter 6, Section 603, Section 604. So, Section 1 says, Chapter 10 is hereby amended, and Section 120 is added as follows. Residential short-term rentals are defined as an occupancy of a dwelling on a single-family legal lot of record by transient guests renting all or any portion of the dwelling for periods of 1 to 29 consecutive days. That basically, and I'll paraphrase, that basically means short-term residential rentals are shorter than 30 days in a single-family dwelling. Or in a dwelling on a single-family lot. So that includes a primary dwelling unit or an accessory dwelling unit. Section B, allowed zones are high-density residential, medium-density residential, low density residential, and the green belt. So, conditional, section C, conditional use, the CUP is required. The Planning Commission will consider all applications for said permits and issue the same where all the following criteria are met, all the criteria in the ordinance are met. A permit issued under this section is valid for 1 year and can only be granted or renewed under the following terms and conditions. The lot must be occupied by the lot owner for a minimum of some number of days per year. Two, the owner is responsible for any nuisance created by the guests, which can constitute grounds for revocation or non-renewal of the permit. Three, the owner or local property manager must be designated in the permit as the manager and available to meet the guests upon arrival and A, deliver the keys or codes to the guests and provide 24-hour contact information. I'm going to paraphrase some of these. The owner or property manager who will be available to respond to the guests within 1 hour. B, acquaint guests with a set of written instructions that are visibly posted governing the use of the property, which include 1, the description of the property boundaries and areas where hiking is permitted and trespasses to be avoided. 2, control of dogs and other animals, roaming, barking, or otherwise nuisance. 3, garbage and proper disposal. 4, fire safety and any fire restrictions in effect. 5, authorized parking of guest vehicles. Maybe I'll slow down so we can
talk about these. Yeah, so there's some discussion.
Yeah, so does anyone have a discussion point about anything starting with the first section?
I actually want to go back to B.
Okay.
On the allowed zones.
Yep.
Just a couple of ideas here and a question for Curtis. There are some areas of Boulder that have deed restrictions, and which would, I think, prohibit this because it would, there's single-family deed restrictions. Does that need to be pulled into this? That's covered under something else?
No, that's a deed, that's a restriction that runs with the property.
Right.
And so that can be more restrictive than an ordinance.
And it's a private,
that's a private agreement.
Yeah.
And so if that deed restriction prohibits it, then that's what you agreed to when you bought the property. It doesn't matter what the ordinance says.
Okay. And then one idea on the high density zone, and it may be in a different part of this ordinance, but one of, I think this could happen, properties within so many feet, and in that ordinance it was 300 feet, had to have written consent from adjacent landowners. So I'm thinking in the high density zone,
yeah,
that might be a good point of discussion anyway.
So properties within 300 feet of the dwelling,
right,
would have to have consent that dwelling could be rented out on a short-term basis.
From adjacent landowners?
Yeah.
Josie, do you think that as far as going into this section or as far as part of the CUP? Or you just, in general, you just want to make sure it's covered?
I just wanted to make sure it was covered, and since we're mentioning zones in B,
yeah,
then, yeah.
And that was in the, was it the CNAB discussion or in the hurricane?
I
thought it was CNAB, but I can't remember.
Here, I have it up and highlighted, but I just hit X button, so I'll find it again.
So let's just talk a little bit about how that would work. So I have a dwelling unit that's within a certain number of feet, let's say 300 feet from my neighbor. Before I rent that out to anyone on a short-term basis, I would need to get permission from my neighbor. And that permission would probably come with the permit application.
I would think so. And I guess, you know, if we're going to say that it's within 300 feet of another dwelling,
okay,
that it could apply to more than just the high density.
Mm-hmm.
It could be across the board.
Yeah,
yeah.
We would, in some cases, we may not need it because the setbacks might already preclude that, but we should write it.
Yeah.
That's something to consider. And what problem would we solve there?
I think it would be that noise, privacy, and the character of the neighborhood when, you know, just the transient people coming through. The character, you know, wanting people that they know.
Right. If I'm living 300 feet from another building.
Yeah. I mean, you're aware of what's going on.
Yeah. I want to know who's in there.
Yeah.
I don't want to question it. And in general, we're operating under an assumption that short-term rentals provide more of an opportunity for nuisance.
Yeah.
Good. Makes sense. Anything else on B?
So, tentatively, where did you kind of...
Oh, in canals, or where I was thinking that would go?
Well, yeah, in terms of, so you're saying 300 feet in high-density residential?
I don't think we need to restrict it to high-density. 300 feet is 300 feet.
After talking about it, yeah, if you have another dwelling within 300 feet on an adjacent property.
You need permission from the person within 300 feet.
Right.
And they said from their front door to the nearest corner of the other building, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All zones.
And we'll see how that infringes on property rights. You know, I mean, they discussed it in camp, but I don't know.
Well, you're trying to get something framed out here. And,
yeah.
You may keep it, you may not, you may hear other arguments, but anyway.
Okay, section C. Anything on the introduction?
I think this would be the place because they're talking about let me get back up to some of the requirements that the owner or property manager needs to have available, and I think quiet time would go in this place. There were a couple of suggestions. I think Matt suggested 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., and in one of the other ordinances, it was 10 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Do we have a quiet time ordinance for the town already?
There's something, because I know when we've done the events at the museum, music had to stop by a certain time, and same with the 4th of July. I know Blake has to stop at a certain time, but I don't know what.
So is there a reason to make that quiet time?
I think you would need to make it known, just like they need to make known all of the other rules, you know, so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I do believe a hair there is one.
Yeah.
I know that when we did the Heritage Festival, that was part of one we, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And we had to stop some music.
I don't know why, but I know that that was the deal, just out of respect for everybody, but I don't know if it was.
I didn't recall
it. I remember.
There's no way to know for sure.
We can look it up.
If we wanted to restrict the number of renewals someone could have, if we wanted to restrict the number of rentals in a neighborhood or in some other way, and we wanted to restrict the number of renewals one owner could have, I think this is the place to do it as well. But that's a whole other thing to talk about. So, like,
I never really considered that.
Yeah, I hadn't considered it until I said it.
I think there'd be a way to deal with the fairness. Like, if we're going to limit the number that we're going to allow in either the town as a whole or in geographical areas, somebody could lock into that for life.
Right.
And eliminating that to, you know, three-year terms would be fair.
Yeah. Or maybe less. Or whatever. But limiting it to some kind of term.
Right. So I like that because it's really easy to lock into something forever.
Yeah.
Just to have that.
Well, I was trying to write this. I kind of struggled with the whole mix of that, whole number of days, residence, this. And one limiting factor that I thought I'd throw out to you is that sort of wraps some of these things together is one per customer, period. And that includes corporations with whole family.
Yeah.
You can't divide and conquer. It's, you know, one for whatever, and that's it. And then that gives you, once you do that, then it kind of gives you a little more latitude about number of days you have to be there. Randy and Jimmy's question, et cetera, et cetera. At least it narrows it that much.
I agree.
Coming in
at a minimum.
Buying two or three, four.
At a minimum, I agree that we should have that.
Yeah. I think as far as the limiting, you know, the terms, I think it's something we should continue as a discussion. I think there's a possibility. But also if you're looking at this as something that someone is using as their livelihood, you're saying, oh, you can only have this for X amount of years, and then you're back to not being able to afford what the lifestyle is.
Well, what you would do, I think, in that case is you have a limit to how often or how many years you can rent it out on a short-term basis, but you can rent it out for a long-term basis, which does limit the amount of
things. It changes. It's a different thing.
And the only reason we would do this is if we're limiting the total number. And if we limit the total number, we're doing the same thing. Yeah. We're telling someone in that same neighborhood if they didn't make the cutoff, we're limiting their income as well. Mm-hmm. So we need to be careful. We need to figure it out.
But I think that comes into financial planning. You know, if you know these regulations up front, it's going to come into your decisions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about number one. The lot must be occupied by the lot owner for a minimum of some number of days. I like that restriction.
We had 187 for that one, which was a half a year.
It's a little more.
Or you could.
Is it one day over half a year?
Is that what it was? Yeah.
It should be.
Like 187, 83, something like that.
Yeah. It should be a half a year plus one.
Plus one, okay.
So that you can't qualify. Not that you could anyway, but.
It's the majority.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes, Troy.
This is one that I really like. It seems like something that could help out a lot as far as, you know, keeping people from doing these great things. I'm wondering how. Do you see an enforcement angle here?
I will say, in a general sense, we plan on enforcing every ordinance we write.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we talked about was when we decide that we're going to do these things, that there is going to be a time where everybody has to come into compliance. And I think I was asking Curtis, you know, do we have the money to enforce all this and whatever? And because of the money that will be coming in for these new things, I mean,
it is an interesting question. How do you prove that you have occupied anything for any number of days?
Yeah, Curtis, I mean.
If there's a way around it, that's one of the reasons I throw it out. One per customer, maybe, I don't know, some other criteria. but trying to count days.
It's
going to be wildly difficult. So,
do you?
I don't know, if there's a way, I mean, the town that was doing this, they even talked about their staff and their building staff and control. I mean, they have these people drive around being intrusive.
Is it the case that if, like, and I don't remember, I've lived in different states in the same year, in the same tax, in the same calendar year, and I think I've had to report federally where I've lived, how many days I've lived, I've had residence in a certain state.
Yeah. And also if you're doing, you know, this is regulated by the state, they have to have a tax license, and that would be the record.
That's one way to establish what they're reporting on their taxes and how many days they rented it. But how are you?
Right. It doesn't.
You know, if you're selling some lake and here,
that's a whole different kettle of fish. So
yeah, I'm
trying to figure out how many days they rented it.
Right.
I think it's worth having, even though it might be hard, difficult to enforce. In every case, in some cases, we'll know. Anyway, number two, the owner is responsible for any nuisance created by guests. What does responsible mean in this case?
They could lose their...
They lose their permit.
See,
if there's a fine associated with that nuisance, are we saying that they're responsible for that fine?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So do we need to make that more clear?
What constitutes a nuisance?
Well, I could think of...
Are there laws about what the... Add that into the ordinance, what's a nuisance?
Mm-hmm.
Is
well,
just my neighbor desists and it annoyed me?
I believe... My reading of this is that, let's say someone makes noise after the ordinance states quiet time is, that is a nuisance. We do talk about nuisances in here at some point. That's a good point.
When I think of someone's going to be fined for a nuisance, I automatically think of an animal, and that is something that, you know, you would have law enforcement deal with, and that would be the responsibility.
Yeah, I can also see, like, and I don't know that we have ordinances about, like, trash, you know, and we don't actually have a lot of ordinances. It's most, yeah.
Are we going to take into accountability for wild animals in this area and what they might do while somebody's renting? A dog might respond to something coming into the yard. That, I see that as very different than just a dog barking for no reason.
I mean, another way to think about a nuisance is a nuisance only exists when someone feels like they're infringed.
It's a perception of nuisance.
Exactly, that's my point.
But it's part of the natural resources might think that a dog intimidating wildlife is a finable offense, and if so...
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Rather go back to the old days, bantering with the audience, let's ask the audience member to remember their questions, hold them.
Yeah.
And then instead of having public comment period at the very end of the meeting, so they can remember, finish up your points, and then invite the public up, because it's a terrible record this other way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And we want those comments.
Yeah.
These are valuable comments. We want them on the record in an orderly fashion.
Yeah. Any other comments on two?
Policy. Yeah.
To answer your question about the word responsible, it's just an English word that means they're going to be responsible. There's it's a misdemeanor in the back, and if they are irresponsible, it can lead to revocation or non-renewal of their permit. So I think
words like that are defined. I mean,
sure.
They are. All those words really are defined as far as that goes. You know, what is a nuisance? Well,
I wasn't asking necessarily to define it, but just to make sure we have a common understanding of what we're saying.
Right.
No, good question.
And I just want to clarify, when you said it's a misdemeanor, to be out of compliance with the ordinance, right? And then we would go through our process, the town process, of following up on that misdemeanor, which would eventually go to the higher level of law, right?
Right, and what it says is punishable by 5 or 4 civil penalties.
Okay.
And what I did is I just pulled this right out of the enforcement provision. You mentioned last time that you wanted some kind of penalty.
Right.
I pulled it right out of Ludna. the last section, chapter amendment, and I just pulled it out, and I still haven't figured out exactly what it means, but it's quoted verbatim out of there, and they limited it to a Class C, so I couldn't do a Class B, $1,000 fine, so it's probably a $250 fine, but it's per occurrence.
And I think we're also saying that in if there is a nuisance, the owner is responsible for taking care of that.
I mean, if the dog's barking, put it in.
Yeah. Three, the owner or local property manager must be designated in the permit as a manager and available to meet the guests upon arrival. I think we need to specify in person. Based on my experience.
Yeah, I meant to do that. Lane County Roads requires them to meet them in person and explain.
Yeah. Any other comments on three before we go into the subsections? Subsection A, deliver the keys or codes and provide 24-hour contact information of the responsible party. The owner or property manager, responsible party owner or property manager who will be responsible, available to respond to the guests within 1 hour. By respond to the guests within 1 hour, are we saying in person or just respond? I think we just want to say respond.
By phone, basically, to answer the question, and then if there's a problem, they gotta run over there.
Do we want to specify a time frame that someone should be able to respond in person?
They actually have that in New England County, which I can't remember what that time frame was.
But I think it was 3 hours, but I'd like
to add that.
By phone, okay, good.
B, acquaint guests with a set of written instructions visibly posted within and governing the use of the property, which shall include a description of the boundaries, control of dogs and other animals, garbage containers to proper disposal, fire safety and restrictions, authorized parking.
Okay, so on parking, there was a really good language in Canal that was, there must be additional off-street parking space beyond the number of vehicles already normally parked at the property for every increment of 4 guests allowed to book. I was at first thinking, do we do that by bedrooms? How do you,
I like that.
But I like this one because 4 guests can fit in a vehicle and you'd only have one parking space. But sometimes you have a larger home when, you have friends, groups of friends come. So every 4, makes sense.
And that was in Canab?
It's in Canab, yeah.
Very cool.
And maybe we should add another, something else in here about local ordinances like quiet time.
Yeah. I like the quiet time, for sure.
So in the written instructions visibly posted, they shall also include...
Okay. Even though we don't have a local ordinance...
Well, let's...
We could put it in here.
Yeah, let's either reference a local ordinance or put it in.
Or just put a quiet time in after 10 and before...
8.
What time does Farland get up?
We get up early, but that doesn't mean we want to hear them at that hour.
Any other comments on B or 3 in general? Okay, 4. Any owner of a single-family dwelling shall be limited to 1 permit per legal lot of record under the terms of this ordinance, and shall not be entitled to apply for a second short-term rental shall not be entitled to apply for a residential short-term rental for a second property within the time limits of Boulder.
Agreed.
Yeah. 5, proof of ownership and occupancy shall be part of the permit application. Owner is defined as any individual or entity as shown on the property tax rolls of Garfield County. Ownership shall be defined as the person or persons shown in the ownership rolls, or in the case of an entity, the persons designated in the permit application as the owner occupants for the purposes of this ordinance. And the reason we have entities here is that some people own their properties as an entity rather than outright.
Sure.
Okay, 6. Sales tax license and number issued by the Utah State Commission to the owner, a business license issued by the town, a list of all guests, monies paid, and proof of sales and transit room taxes remitted on a timely basis, all available for audit. This is governed by some state ordinance?
The state tax commission considers this a sale of goods or services, and so unlike a 30-day rental, you have to pay sales tax on it, and I believe they require a business license, so that's why I put in both a business license from the town and the CUP, because it's really not fair to put it on the town clerks to try and see if all the compliances are there. That should be a job for the planning commission under the ordinance, and if they decide they want to delegate that at some point in some way on the easy ones, but then if the person you delegate it to, if there's any question at all, say, sorry, you've got to get on the agenda and come and plead your own case.
Is it worth referencing the state ordinance that requires this?
The code.
The code.
It's state law. I don't know if you have to, but you have to have a sales tax license issued by the state and a number and a business license from us, which they're going to ask for, right? Yeah.
And if you go, I think Laurel said too, if you went with Airbnb, that they do all that. I think she mentioned.
Well, they do. They collect it.
Oh.
And then they remit it into your account.
Right.
And then it's your job then to file a quarterly return and pay that tax.
Yeah.
It's a felony if you don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And when we say timely basis, what do we think is timely?
Well, it's determined by the state. They'll tell you what's timely. It's quarterly unless you reach a certain amount of revenue, which you'll never would on one of these. And then it has to be monthly or even weekly, because literally you are escrowing their money. It's never the owner of the property's money. It's paid.
Yeah.
The owner of the property is a collection agency to report to the state.
So
the list of all guests, monies paid, and proof of sales and transit room taxes remitted on a timely basis is remitted to the state.
Yes, but what I'm saying here, maybe you want to beat that up a little bit, but it's available for audit so that if when they come in with their conditional use permit, show us that you're current on your sales tax. I think we should have that in there.
And it's in one.
Show that you're current and be able to provide it. And then if you get into this days that you rent, because let's flip that 183 days occupancy, but let's flip it. What's the other side of that? Well, you can't rent it out more than 180 days. That's easier to enforce because you got the sale. Unless they're cheating on their taxes, you've got those records. And then if there's any question at all, bring your records with us. Show us, you know, how many nights you rented it, and prove it by your sales tax records.
Yeah. But Curtis, what if it is they're using a room in their house or an accessory dwelling unit or something like that, because then they're here the whole time? When people look for loopholes, that's...
No.
It works really well if there's one dwelling on the property, right? But then if you have somebody saying, this one I live in and this one I rent, or I rent, you know, just to look at the big picture.
I know. And that's where you get in all these permutations. But if we just kept narrowing it down, and then you keep throwing those out.
Yeah.
Then we'll have...
I don't need to.
If we don't throw them out...
No, I know.
You should.
No, that's, I do.
No,
that's
should.
Why
you should throw them out as soon as you think of them.
Yeah.
And the other ordinances do call for a maximum number of things you can rent. So that's we need to discuss that.
Right. And that's easier. That's going to be easier to enforce, probably, or at least... get data on than how many days you stay in the house. And what about somebody who just has the one house, really needs the income, but they have a relative that they can go stay with and rent out the house during, you know, spring and fall, which is the high season.
That was all much of the maximum number of days and the number of days occupied.
Okay. So it echoes from this section, yes?
The maximum number of days to rent?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're saying we're going to say that we want access to the same information that's being provided to the state?
Yeah, we can make that part of the conditional use permit.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yep, definitely.
D, standards. Residential short-term rentals must conform to the following standards. Talk about number one, parking spaces, and I like the language that Josie Boltram can add. Two, meet all applicable health, fire, building codes, including smoke detectors, adequate exits, and accessible fire extinguishers. I like that. I wonder if we should... This is where we consider whether we want to beef up the requirements for a residential short-term rental. I agree that it doesn't make sense to make it the same as commercial. I agree that it doesn't need to meet the commercial residential standards.
There's no way to do that.
No.
What does an accessible fire extinguisher mean? That's my main question.
Let's have one mounted up visibly on the wall in the kitchen and one other somewhere else in the house.
And maybe we can add to the written instructions location of fire extinguishers.
Okay.
And if we do that, I don't necessarily think we need to specify where the fire extinguishers are, as long as part of the written instructions it tells, it explains where they are. Three, approved culinary water source and wastewater facilities. Any standards that we're missing? So we have parking, fire safety, and essentially sanitation. Right, E, violation of this ordinance, including providing false information on an application for the permit, is a Class A misdemeanor punished by a fine, etc. That's essentially it. So the things that we want to consider, other than the changes that we made, are whether or not we want to get consent of neighbors for dwellings that are close. And I think the big one is, well, whether we want to restrict the number of days you can rent, and then a bigger one is whether we want to limit the number of units in town. Yeah. And if we do, how we want to do that.
I think Matt suggested 4 per zone. Upper Boulder, Middle Boulder, Lower Boulder.
4
rentals per zone, which would be 12 for the entire town. We've read some ordinances that really limited even more than that. I mean, 12 for a town of Boulder is a lot compared to some of the other ordinances.
How many did you find, Curtis?
Actually, I'm really kind of surprised because we talk about it as though, we're being overwhelmed with them, and yet the Robeson Ranch, the folks who bought the Robeson Ranch, they just opened up a couple of them down there and almost doubled the number of town.
Yeah.
Now the county is different. Grants in the county. There's a couple of, 2 or 3 out in the county.
There's already 4 on Lower Boulder Road are currently operating.
My guess is
there are 4?
There are at least 4, yeah.
Oh, where are they?
Well, the 3 that are the... That ranch, and then that's how Ellie's B&B is all through Airbnb.
Yeah.
That's how she does all of her bookings.
Let's be clear.
It's different because of...
Yeah, that's very different, and it's not governed by this ordinance. She's a B&B, and she's enabled under a different section of the code. It's like Boulder Mountain Guest Ranch advertises heavily on Airbnb and VRBO, but they're a different kind of business. So this is strictly single-family residential.
I wonder if some aren't on there because it's the off-season.
Should they come on and off?
That's possible. That's possible.
Yeah. I searched about a month ago and came up with the same, but, still off-season.
How many?
I think 4-ish.
Yeah.
Total in town.
There was the one up in Heavenly Acres. Is that Laurel?
Yeah.
Yeah, hers.
Laurel's is off right now, and there's another one on. I've looked recently, about the past couple of months, once a month, and they just change frequently. Because up in that neighborhood, there are a few that come on and off frequently.
Yeah,
this one's been on there for a long time. I see that in a couple of years. I don't know who. I think it's in Heavenly Acres.
I don't know which one it is.
Do they recognize it?
Well, anyway, we need to talk about if
Well, do we have an agreement that we do want to limit the number?
I'd like to limit.
You can always, you can always come back.
I feel like there's got to be, exactly.
That's a problem too. You don't have to.
To get us started, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
I think I want to limit them as well. So the question is, how do we want to limit them? And then how do we want to make it fair?
Yeah.
Those are the big three things that I think we need to consider. Do you, Elizabeth, do you want to read Matt's comments?
Sure. Jesse just read this one, though. He was saying that he does believe that there should be a limit per neighborhood, and he said as a starting point, perhaps four per neighborhood. We can assess from there and change in the future one way or another. Going to as far as restrictions for minimum, he was saying that perhaps a minimum of a three-night stay and or restrictions on how many days it can be rented. The intent here is to reduce excessive traffic and disturbance in residential neighborhoods.
I think that's what you said.
His other two are less about the skeleton. But I've been checking them off, making sure by the end of the night all of his comments are shared.
Great. So that's another good suggestion that we should consider is whether or not we want to have a minimum stay.
I like it. I mean,
a minimum what?
A minimum
number of nights. Either three nights or maybe two nights.
Three nights.
Tough. And then when you do Airbnb, a lot of it's one night. And what's the point?
It's like Matt mentioned, it's to limit the number of traffic coming and going, turnover. Yeah. I've noticed when I cruise the Airbnb site, there's a lot that do require that minimum stay. And I don't know if that's because they want that income
so it's a local requirement.
That's because of the cleaning fees and so forth. They just do that on their own.
So the problem we're trying to solve is the changeover in traffic.
I guess if that's the, you know, the fact, does the traffic change if it's a different person each night or the same traffic? If you're looking at it as far as a fact, right?
Yeah.
If Denise and Ray are staying there for three nights and coming in and out versus Troy staying a night, Michelle staying a night, and Peter staying a night, it's the same amount of traffic.
Right.
It's different.
It is. I don't know.
Loading and unloading.
Yeah, and you know, so I don't know where that answer is. It's just.
I'm gonna bring my brother.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so, just if you're going back to figuring out proof and facts.
I kind of agree. It feels more like a way for us to just limit the amount of rentals there.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking is how much does that bring down the actual market of renting?
Right, and do we want to do that?
Yeah.
Once again, I go back to what's the problem.
Right.
You know, we kind of refer to that, and I would encourage you to try and address real problems in this. Otherwise, you're just starting to write an overly restrictive ordinance on a bunch of what-ifs.
Right, and if we would have an...
You can always go back if something becomes a problem.
Yeah, and we would have an unintended consequence of reducing the income that people...
Exactly, because people are here for 8 or 6 months of the year, and then they're totally gone. So no matter what, it's like we talk about in work and whatever, gee, I can't wait till all those people go home. And then in July, everybody's here, and that's the nature of seasonal businesses.
Right, and
it's not like these guys are killing it.
No.
Really not.
And the thing is,
somebody comes through on a Tuesday night, and they stay, and then you're empty for a week.
Yeah.
So you're selling Scotty. No, you got to find somebody... They can do it for two or three nights, and it really does crimp the property. Right?
And we have a stated goal of giving people income opportunities.
Yeah, and they only get 6 months, 4 months of the year as it is.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
Might as well be here with all the tourists.
Yeah,
It's something, I don't know if it's at the end or not, but Peter was trying to make a comment to that.
We're about to open it up, so go ahead, Peter, when you start.
Well, for that particular thing, there's a reference in that CNAP thing about how Santa Fe limits the number of rental periods per year, which is a different way to control it. So it's not a minimum stay. It's you can only rent it out for so many periods a year. So if it's three nights, three nights,
that's going to be right. But I, I think that's still the consequence of that is that we're limiting the potential of people to make money, and I don't think we want to do that.
Well, and you can watch that things have changed a lot. We used to get a break in the winter, and not so much anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And that, you know, that's the same one. I mean, I witnessed that in the lab over there through the grills.
So the thing we have to consider is, you know, we can include this to make a more restrictive ordinance at the cost of actually the benefit of people making money. Or we can leave it open as a problem that we monitor and then maybe go back and change if it actually becomes a problem.
Yeah.
All right. One of Matt's points, and it went to when I was referencing Ellie's, and I think that was part of it. But so Matt's question is, if there's a limitation or, you know, a ban on vacation rentals, you know, let's say the minimum was met, what is the process for someone getting an actual B&B license like the one that exists in Lower Boulder? How is that different? Why not just allow those instead? And then he says apologies if it's a naive question.
It's
a good question.
Do we know what zones the B&Bs are allowed? Is it...
I think they're allowed in several zones, but they've got a different definition, and somebody has to be there fixing a breakfast or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think there's a conflict with this ordinance.
But
so the people that have in their houses.
But yes, he was talking about how would someone go about doing that to give them that opportunity.
Right. I think we need to consider.
They just apply.
Yeah. I think we need to consider. Yeah, we need to consider the idea that if someone, you know, can't get an Airbnb license, how are they going, can't get a license for a short-term rental, what roadblocks do they have to actually getting a B&B license, and are they significant enough, or is it easy enough to get a B&B license that will limit to 4 Airbnbs and will have 8 B&Bs? Because I don't.
I did. I told you.
Yeah. So, the point is that we don't want to be restrictive here, where we have a way for people to get around whatever restrictions we write, because our ordinance on actual B&Bs is lenient enough that it's easy to do that.
So but did we talk about that as far as B&Bs have they're pretty restrictive, right? And they're run through the state, and they have.
No, they're not run through the street. They're a conditional use permit through the town, and it's a pretty short definition, but it's really encouraged not to start extrapolating all the what-ifs you can think of, because I do think
we should take a look at what the actual difference between a residential short-term rental and a B&B is.
Yeah, it's a very short definition.
And I don't think we need to do it.
Here you go, Perry.
I don't think we need to do
that. Okay, fasten it down.
So,
but that was one of Matt's.
So B&Bs are allowed in every zone.
Yeah. Going back to as far as the quiet hour, you know, I think that's an excellent thing as far as for consistency. If there isn't currently one, that we should look at what other quiet. Quiet hours are currently in town. Like, Denise, do you know what the lodge says? Because I know that was one of the determinations for the town. Shall we have to go down? Because it's the lodge has it in their rules. Not to put you on the spot or anything. But if we're creating one to be consistent, it might be worth looking at saying what is the lodge's current quiet hours? What were the ones that... Because it came up whenever for Red House to do something... For them to have events, there was a certain hours there. And so if it's not already an ordinance, I think it's worth it for us to do the homework to see what else is being done so it can be consistent.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for right now, I just got to have a place to fill this out. So I'm going to put what I heard was quiet time from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. And just in this ordinance, which just means property manager don't, you know, keep it cool at 10.
Right. Okay, any other comments of the ordinance before we open up to general comments?
Matt's last thing was, will the RSTR's building requirements as in placement, size, etc., should follow how we mapped it out in the ADU ordinance? Not quite. I read it exactly how it's written.
So we have size restrictions on ADUs.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
What is the yes?
It's not a question, it just said VRSTR's building requirements as in placement, size, et cetera, ..
Because we
should follow how we mapped it out in the ADU ordinance.
If you have 800, you get 800, you know, square right. feet. If you have 5 acres, then you get your ADU.
Yeah,
you
well, that. But we're not, I mean,
I don't
this
see
is
that.
Apples and oranges.
Yeah. I just, I'm reading
basically, and what we're saying is we are not as far, we're not, yeah, we're not doing anything with
no.
size or anything, because that's all already covered in the ADU.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Anything else? All right, any general comments? Rick?
I've got a couple comments. Back on, can you come up to the podium, please? State your name for the record.
Thank you.
Okay, Ray Nelson. I've got a couple comments. On page 2, item 3, where first starts about, yes, upon arrival, they'll be described what the requirements are. Do you want to have that on a sheet of paper that they sign after that, so that you have written proof that the guest has been given those requirements, they understand them, and they sign it, and they sign in? Because if you don't, you're going to get a conflict if they did, they didn't. And it may run into problems at some time. And also, it makes sure that the property owner is also doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I foresee like a packet that each guest will be given, and then that packet needs to go someplace where it says that.
Whenever you go into B&B, you end up getting a packet, and you're going to sign it.
Yeah.
So that should be something that would be in the packet.
Yeah.
The other part is on number 5, I believe it is, when it talks about the owner has to be there and available within a certain time period or whatever that is. I think you have to make some kind of allowance for some other property manager to be in the picture. So either you, when you do your permit, you sign up as a responsible person, or you have some documentation that says somebody else is responsible.
Yeah, that's the intent.
Okay.
Well, wait. Is that not how it's written?
It says the owner or a local property manager must be designated in the CEP as the manager and available to meet the guest upon arrival. So it's covered in...
But you need the paperwork as part of the requirement, so that if I have a piece of property that I don't want anything to do with it, and I got Joe Blow running it for me, I don't want the phone calls, and you need to go know who to go to, and it's on paperwork, and it's
part of that package.
It's part of that package.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically what we're saying is, in the written set of instructions, those written set of instructions include who the contact is.
Mm-hmm. And just very quickly a question. We had 1 hour, and then you said something.
Respond in person within.
And by phone in 1 hour, and in person if necessary, how?
3 days.
3 hours.
3 hours, yeah. Any other comments or questions?
Peter,
I have some. Peter Benson. So let me find my notes here. Let's see, the big point is, tourist jobs in general are pretty lousy unless you're the owner of the business that's servicing the tourists. So that's, I think, promoting, ownership, small business is a great thing. I don't think we covered at all somebody doing an Airbnb and just having it in a bedroom in their house, either saying it's not allowed, or we've all been kind of assuming that somebody vacates their house and rents their whole house, but you could Airbnb a bedroom in your house just as easily.
Yeah.
That could be, if somebody wants to do that, you could probably say you have to make it a B&B, an actual bed and breakfast, and then do it that way. That's if you want to do that. So you need to cover that one way or another.
It says all or any portion, so it intends to allow both.
Okay.
Full occupancy, or a bedroom, two bedrooms, whatever.
Okay. And then, for the same thing with an ADU, you know, you have either you live in the back house, and you're renting out a big house.
You would bring that up?
Yeah, but you're going to have to deal with it.
What's the concern there?
What's the concern?
Peter, what's the concern there?
I think there's been, what I've been hearing is kind of an assumption that most people are assuming that it's,
a full dwelling.
A full dwelling,
yeah.
And you're renting a whole house.
Right. Although I think so that addresses it, but what was your second concern?
Having it in an ADU. Having renting out your ADU as a short-term rental.
I think we're allowing that. I think
that's what it sounds like.
Conditional use.
As long as it's just one per customer and you've restricted your rental period, then, you know, what do you care whether they stay in this room or this room?
Right.
As long as they're abiding by all the rules that you've set forth.
So for example, I'm a property owner. I have a primary dwelling. I have an accessory dwelling. My permit should cover whether or not I want to rent out my primary dwelling, my accessory dwelling, or a room in either of
those. For the quiet time, I think it should just be the ordinance. It shouldn't count on some other ordinance covering it.
Just in here, right?
Yeah, it should be in this ordinance. And the stuff about one per person, one CUP per person or entity. The CNAB thing had a longer definition of what a person or entity, so it's like a spouse or people who are sharing.
And they allowed two per person, but
they had a longer definition of what a single entity and a single person, and I think that's actually helpful.
Yeah.
And it talks about like building codes and stuff. Most houses were built according to code when they were built. Does this mean you trigger a whole building inspection when you have a B&B and you have to have your
codes
current as of the time?
I think whatever portion you're renting out should conform to what's in the ordinance. Yeah. Not necessarily,
There's not really an inspector for that.
That's
building inspectors for new buildings.
That's a good.
So you don't have somebody whose job would be to say, "Oh yeah, you're conforming or you're not conforming."
Yeah, I don't
know.
So
but verification.
Insurance and liability, though.
Yeah.
If your stairs aren't up to code and somebody falls and breaks,
that's the rule, and nobody's checking on it.
Pretty hard.
Enforcement problem later.
You had to go through and bring every house up to code. Pretty impractical.
We can sort of pick and choose. We can say, well, for instance, fire standards. Like, your house may have been up to, well, actually, fire code standards. You can't get grandfathered into old safety standards for fire, right?
Well, the house exists. Nobody's.
Right. So that would be an example where we could pick and choose. We could say, like, whatever you rent out has to be up to current fire safety standards.
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Yeah.
And then we can decide whether things like stairs and other things we want to consider. But I would say at a minimum we want and we do have a fire inspector.
I'm not an inspector.
There's a guy who does building inspections, but it's all through the county and it's through the building permit process. So you don't get pull a building permit to do it.
And the school gets charged to have the fire marshal come in, the county one, to inspect us. It's a big fee. Because I just did it.
Do you know how much it is?
That's because it's a school facility. See, and this just kind of brings up a comment. It's just a matter of time that something's going to happen in the nation, liability-wise, and there's going to be federal statutes on this, in my opinion. If you look at history of why statutes
are created, and it's going to be because something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to probably come down to the building code and fire. Right. You know?
Well, I am in favor of saying that whatever you rent out has to be up to current fire safety.
Right.
And I don't think it's, and if someone has to pay the fire marshal to come in to get that certificate, I think that's fine.
Yeah, and just figuring out how do we, because it's the same. I mean, you look at long-term rentals, right? You know, you would want, we as a community would want the people that are staying in our long-term rentals to have the same standards, but the rentals are not up to any of these in our long-term rentals.
Well, we can solve this problem for this
ordinance.
And we can make it part of the business license application that you need to present that certificate. Mm-hmm. And we can consider if we want to do the same, write another ordinance with the same thing for long-term rentals.
But there comes the property rights back because RSTRs are a commercial activity.
Right.
Long-term rentals don't fall into that definition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's going to...
Yeah, so let's agree on the short-term rental.
Yeah.
And we can table the long-term rental. But it's a good point.
So am I hearing correctly? Fire is good. Smoke detectors, exits, fire extinguishers are good. And then I left that in there from the ADE ordinance, and that is all building codes, that's way over the top. So we'll keep fire.
Right.
But then approved culinary and wastewater, I think I probably should just stay in because you don't want to approve a residential short term rental with no septic tank.
Instead
of out the backfield.
Right. I mean in theory. That should all be covered by the ADE ordinance, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, so you gotta do what you're gonna do in here, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine having it in here, but I'm saying I can't think of a scenario where someone is trying to rent something out. I mean, we're saying that it has to be a dwelling unit or a portion thereof.
Right.
And all those dwelling units or portions thereof have already been brought up to the building code when they were built.
Well, that's true, like for a new ADU, but what about Scotty's house or whatever? And it has nothing to do with the ADU, so you just rent a bedroom out.
Right, but are we saying that Scotty's house might not have appropriate culinary and wastewater facilities?
No, I think it probably does, but I'm just saying if we leave that in there, then at least that's kind of a, like fire, water, and waste disposal. It's sort of like a minimum baseline, you know,
I'm fine with leaving it in. I'm just saying I think we should require a fire inspection, or at least we should consider it.
Well, that's a can of worms.
Well, we're talking about if,
you could make them hire, some certificate from the county fire marshal.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Professionally does it.
Yeah.
And so basically they actually have to pay for it.
That's, right. And it's tied to their business. It's something we can consider.
Yeah.
It'd be good to talk to that person.
The fire marshal?
The fire marshal of the county, whoever does these inspections.
Yeah.
You can't even get the one in our county to come here. We tried for a long time. We finally got severe to come over. Just for that.
Yeah.
Boulder. I know, it's Boulder.
One other point that I had in here was, and it's addressed in the CNAP thing, was exchanges where you're doing a house swap with somebody, and basically it says that doesn't count as a residential short-term.
Because it's not
there's
a
no money changing hands.
And I think that's fine.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, it's the same thing if I let someone house sit.
Yeah.
Which is not considered here.
Yeah.
It's not a commercial activity, so I don't think
we...
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Next on the agenda is update from Joseph.
Okay. Let me get my notes up. So we had our first meeting this week. I think it was very productive. So we decided that we're going to use, I set up a Google Drive to share all of our documents, and we're doing collaboration on Google Drive, so that's up and going. I developed a spreadsheet where I took each section of the general plan, put it in a column, broke it down by section, pulled in the Boulder Community Assessment, pulled in all the working group recommendations, and did that by section, and then each of the members of the committee have a column to do their notes and updates. So that's how we're going to do the initial work, and then once we have gone through each section, then we'll start building the Word document and doing those edits. We have action items for each member that's highlighted in the spreadsheet right now. We went through chapter by chapter. This is kind of the first phase where we pulled out the things that are obviously needed for updates, right? So those are highlighted, they're assigned to everyone, and we're going to work on that over the next week. We'll just, like I said, collaborating on using that site and emails if anything else comes up. And as we're going through the sections that are assigned, we'll be noting anything else that we're seeing needs updates as well. So I don't think I'll really go into the details of those until we actually have a product. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll go over in January when we meet again. And just look for if there's anything that jumps out. So my notes here just are chapter by chapter, what we've decided to work on this month, what may not need updates because it's just standard information. And then our next meeting is scheduled for January 7th. And so that'll be a couple days before our Planning Commission meeting again. And so I'm hoping at that time I'll have like specifics on updates and a document for everybody to review.
Great.
As far as timeline goes, we're a little behind schedule because when I first mentioned the timeline, that was a few months ago, and then we needed to get volunteers and all of that. So I'm still thinking from today, maybe 5 months most. I mean, it seems like with our discussion and what we've come up with so far, I really don't see why this process is going to take a long time. So I'm
shooting for 5 months to something we can present to the public.
I'm hoping to be able to have something prior to that to the public. So let's say April, something for the public.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Great.
So, yeah.
Did Peter go to the meeting?
No.
So that was brought up at the town council on last Thursday.
Okay.
Was that the town council was under the assumption that one of them was being invited and included.
Oh.
And so it got, you should speak to the council.
Tina was there.
Yeah, I knew Tina was on it, but that was, Steve brought it up and he reminded me tonight if you didn't come to make sure that we knew that the town council wanted a representative on it.
Mm-hmm. So are you delegated as the, shall I just put you on?
I don't know.
I'm the planning guy.
And that's what, I don't mean to put you on this, but Steve just asking to make sure I mentioned that that was up on your all's agenda last week.
Yeah. Okay, good.
For meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'll go ahead and forward you all the information that we've had, and then invite you to the Google Drive.
Okay.
Yeah, and so January 7th, I hope you're available.
Yeah, well,
okay.
Either both not or.
There you go. Tina was available, so I think we're good. Okay.
Yeah, we should be back.
Great. And Vicki, any questions or comments? All right, let's talk about the schedule. Last month we talked about maybe changing our meeting to before the town council meeting instead of after. So we would meet the. When's this town council meet?
First Thursday.
So we would meet.
They decided to not change theirs.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Okay. So we would meet the Thursday before the first Thursday, or the last Thursday.
Yeah, that would be, that would change it to the last.
Doesn't matter. Did you say the fourth or the last?
I would say the last, because sometimes there are
five.
Yeah.
So it would be the last Thursday of the month?
Yeah.
I could live with that.
Thursdays on
Friday.
That's the day.
We think there might be a distinction without a difference because what we're trying to do is, if you were recommending something up, to give them 10 days, but then you need a window in addition to 10 days. You need to get it in the paper. So.
Well, no, I think that's
just
the thing of it is they can't really put anything in the paper until they've at least talked about it. So, all this really does is. Let's say that you recommended something tonight and put it forward to them where they are meeting the first Thursday of January. They talk about it, and then they decide they need to schedule a public hearing, and then there's another one in February. So it's kind of taking out that middle.
Yeah, there's no way to really finesse it.
You still are going to be set with a public hearing time period, but I think to eliminate to reduce the amount of time between your meeting and them talking about it is what you're reducing, and I think that's possibly a good thing.
The other option is to split the difference and make it a third Thursday.
I'm just wondering if they are giving sufficient time to review something.
Well, they're not going to make any decisions anyway based on anything you recommend to them. I mean, they would talk about, do we want to, what they are going to talk about is, they did this action, we're going to need to have a public hearing on this thing, when do you want to have a public hearing? That's kind of what you're dealing with. They can't decide anything without the public hearing that you would forward to them.
I think whichever we decided should be the least confusing for the community members, because it's one thing for us to have things switching around, but if the whole point is that our meetings are public and that we're encouraging public input, it should support community members.
And last Thursday is a little confusing.
Mm-hmm. And you have things like that come up, like holidays at the end of the month. I mean, looking at this, the end of December would be difficult.
And the end of November will be difficult.
Mm-hmm. So just leave it?
We either leave it or make it the third Thursday, which kind of splits the difference. But I'm not. Do we gain anything by doing that? Okay.
I think not. I think if you were going to meet like the Tuesday before their meeting, and just as a means of notifying them that, you know, like, you changed your meeting time. That's a notification, that's something. As far as them being able to act on anything, like an application or something, you're moving forward, it doesn't give them...
We always change it later, but if you're comfortable with the way it is, this is what people are used to, maybe we leave it alone now, then maybe what we do, when we get a little more experience with this, we start diagramming it out. What if the town council wants to send you one down, which they do, like they got, and then, okay, we'll consider, have your public hearing, then we'll have ours. So we just kind of got a diagram. Does it take 3 or 4 months to get one thing?
Let's document what arises as a problem resulting from what we're doing.
Right. And for now, let's just keep it. All right. That sounds good.
So we're in the second Tuesday of every month.
Well, we'll call it Thursday.
Oh, we're going to do Thursday?
Wait,
is today Thursday?
Thursday is Thursday. And you want to stay with the same daylight savings time?
Yeah.
6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, switch off. Anything else before we open up for general comments?
Not really.
Just a
quick question.
Yeah.
Are you taking notes on the different things we're talking about? I didn't know you took notes on all the different nuances here.
Yes, I did.
Send me a little summary by email.
Yeah.
So I don't miss stuff.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Let's open it up for general comments. This our sixth visitors.
I mean, we should consider having every short-term rental have a trampoline. It might be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Consider it. I make a motion to end the meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Agenda for next time.
Oh, right. Agenda for next time. We are going to... will we have another version of the ordinance? We'll have another version of the ordinance.
I will. I'll be gone in February, so for what that's worth.
And I may not be here the second week of January. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we'll review the next version of the ordinance, and we'll get an update from Josie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably all we want to tackle.
You will need to elect chair and vice chair.
Have you already done this for a whole year? Have we done this for a whole year?
I think so.
Wow.
Nope.
Yeah. It's been a year. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's usually the first meeting of the
The other thing that we should discuss is how we're going to put it out to the public, but the town council just passed on Thursday that we get to have an alternate person, and so that we should decide how and when we want to put that out to the public.
Are we doing that, or is the town council doing that?
No, I'm doing it.
It's us. And that's what they said.
I've already written the deal, but have I posted it? No.
Okay.
So I just need to get that.
I think you post it.
Yeah.
I'll just put it out there, and then the town council will pick somebody.
It's a paper posting.
What business do we have with that? We're going to post it, but they're the potential.
The town council is to decide.
Right, it's potential to the hands of the town council.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just me to do what I just want
to remember to do it.
Yeah. Okay, so we will elect.
So it's all ready to go. I just need to send it out there. Get it back.
Okay.
Yes.
So
it's the same as.
Tell your favorite people to sign up.
Yeah,
the same requirements. It's like posting for a vacancy. It's the same requirements.
Yeah.
One more quick question before you do.
Yeah.
As a placeholder for 4 short-term rentals per upper, middle, and lower?
Have we decided that?
I don't know.
I think we talked about it.
Did you want a number? Is that the problem? Still in search of a solution.
Let's put it in the ordinance. No, I think we agree that we want to limit it. Let's try that out in the ordinance and see what it looks like.
4 in 3 zones. And so.
Well, not 3 zones, but 3 neighborhoods.
3 neighborhoods.
And we'll have to map that.
Has already snagged off 3 of them. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We need to figure out whether we consider existing units.
Yes,
one per customer.
I think we need to consider. Yeah.
Okay, I'll put that as a placeholder.
Yeah, because it's just a number to start with.
Right, and then we can have a discussion about how. Right, we'll get feedback from there. We talk about how we want to prevent lifetime.
Yeah.
Ownerships. Okay, so for next week we will
find neighborhood real quick.
Boulder King Estates, Lower Boulder, and
The Draw.
Well, that's right.
You don't want to
cut people out, so we're going to say.
Yeah.
We'll have to figure out.
Yeah, we just got to divide that whole town limits into thirds.
What is Matt
thirds?
Matt said in 3 sections, he said upper, central, and lower.
Yeah.
But where does upper start? Because it's not just that neighborhood. It would be anything on the highway
anything north of Boulder proper.
Well, Boulder proper comes from.
Anything north of downtown. We'll leave it to Curtis. And they were criticized.
Curtis, did you hear that last comment?
I'm sorry.
Did you hear the last comment?
Oh, no.
It was really quite nice to
me. I said, we'll leave it to Curtis and we'll criticize what he writes.
Okay, I'll think of something. It'll be a place.
But the idea is north of town, and maybe.
Okay.
So we will do elections. We'll hear from Josie. We'll look at the next version of the draft. And that is it. Okay.
Soon after that, we should get some other people off the
net. Yeah.
Have open meetings.
Yeah.
Because we've gotten pretty far.
Yeah.
It's going at that. I know that there's a couple other meetings that I've gone to that has worked really well that they do, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, whatever the set public comment period is at the very beginning and at the very end, just so people that just want to say a comment and leave don't have to sit all the way to the very end to do a public comment.
Yeah.
And it works really well in other meetings, so it might be something we consider as an agenda item.
Okay. Yes, we can try that. I move to adjourn.
Second.
Let's vote.
Aye.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Hey, you asked for the set. Oh, okay, that was your. Okay. Yeah, I was just going to make so much effort.
I'll let you know. I'll be around now.
We talked a lot.
I have a lot of airtime.
Yeah.
Well, no one can. There is this progression.
Oh, no.
Do you want to turn that off?
Yeah, we
Thank you.